And 24 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday, the last day of February, we were joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments. He's a vintner and a biochemist with years of pharmaceutical experience. That's pertinent often to our discussions these days, what with COVID and masks and lockdowns and stuff. But, you know, our basic forte here is science. And when we get a chance to report that science has been set on its ear, we jump on it. And Don has come up with an article here that really tells an interesting story. I just love it when the experts are found to be not so expert and not so sure of themselves anymore. What's the story about here? It's about deep space now.
Deep space, yes, and supposedly deep time. So we can talk about both of those topics. But the astronomers using the James Webb telescope, peering out into the supposedly distant past, have discovered that galaxies way out in the in our past, supposed past, are just as big and have just as many, you know, stars in them as our own galaxy.
Well, that's kind of the paradigm, isn't it? Because when they look farther away, that equates with farther in time, which is a little bit above my pay grade, I think. But, is there a supposed point of beginning of the universe? And if they look toward that and can adjust their lens to see things closer to that, they just automatically assume they're younger, don't they? Is that the way it works?
That is exactly the way it works, because their premise is that there was once a Big Bang, and the Big Bang kind of started everything. Actually, their premise is there once was a singularity, and out of that singularity, and what's a singularity? A singularity is nothing.
Yeah, it's a mystery word, boy. It means one thing.
Yeah. So it sounds impressive, but what they really mean, out of nothing came everything. And, all we needed to do was read the first chapter of Genesis to find that out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the Big Bang basically says there was once a big, gigantic explosion, and so as the universe expanded, then, you know, stars started to coalesce out of dust, and from the stars you got stars gathering together into galaxies, and those galaxies would get bigger and bigger as they trapped more and more stars in them. And so as you look, therefore, they think that the edges of the galaxy, which are 13, they think that the edge of our universe is 13.7 billion, you know, plus or minus a tenth of a billion or so, is where the edge of the galaxy is. And if we could look back there, then we can see the beginning of time.
That's how many light years, and a light year is, I've forgotten that number. Used to be on the tip of my tongue, John.
A light year is the time it takes for light to travel in 1 year.
Well, the distance it travels in a year.
You take the speed of light, and
186,300 miles, assuming it's constant, which they've discovered is not true. Einstein helped us with that, huh?
That assumption is blown way out of the wind, out of proportion now, because we know Einstein, you know, Einstein's great discovery was that, hey, perhaps space might be everything, and there's a fabric to space, and mass actually distorts space. So, you know, maybe if you get a massive object and then you have a star behind it, you'll actually see two stars because it acts like a big lens. And that, indeed, after Einstein died, that's what they found.
Well, the assumption has always been that light travels in a straight line. So if we're seeing a light with a telescope, the James Webb telescope or whatever, the Hubble telescope, whatever, we assume the light is directly coming from that source to us. Zap. But Einstein's theory says no. That light could have traveled a complex path through curves and ups and downs, kind of like a country highway, before it got to us. So the sense of time becomes distorted when you think it's just a straight line.
Well, it's even more complicated than that because, you know, the light travels along a space-time lines, okay? So the fabric of space, and fabric is a good word for it because you can think of it as, you know, a fabric is woven, and so you've got lines that go horizontal and lines that go vertical, and you make up little squares, if you will, in a fabric, and that's when you weave it, that's what you wind up with. Well, you know, if we talk about, you know, the fabric of space, then we're talking about these little squares, you know, making up, which is now three-dimensional because we're talking about a three-dimensional object, which is space, you know, rather than a two-dimensional object. And so you got these little cubes, if you will, or some people call them bubbles, but little cubes that make up the fabric of space.
When you say cubes now, and fabric, we're not talking about a material, a physical material, if I'm hearing you right. This is electromagnetic stuff, right? It's gravity.
This is the medium in which electromagnetism basically travels through, or light travels through, you know, this medium. And one hypothesis is that a quanti of light, if you will travel through one of these little cubes at the same speed. And so that's where you get the constancy of the speed of light. Now, the problem with that is that these cubes are distorted around mass. So the more massive an object, the smaller the cubes, or these little bubbles, if you will. So you have many more bubbles around massive objects than you do out in space, and no one knows how thin space is. So if you really think about space as fabric, and it's really stretchy in between very massive objects, then you actually might think that, well, maybe the speed of light is actually, in absolute terms, really faster through that stretchy space than it is when it gets close to matter. And then if that is indeed the case, and I believe it is, then you don't know how old that light is that came from deep space. And, you know, it could be a matter of a couple of weeks. And there's been a creation scientist who has actually done some calculation using Einstein's equations to say that, indeed, that time may be only a couple of weeks from the very distant objects that we see out in space. And so what does that do then to this theory that or this guess that the deeper you look in space, the older the light is coming from that space? Well, it blows that out of the water completely, because if the light is actually only taking a couple of weeks to get here, then the your deep space light, then you know, it doesn't take 500 million or 13 billion years to get to Earth. It only takes a couple of weeks because of the stretchiness of space.
It's kind of like, and we're looking through the wrong end of the telescope there.
And these astronomers don't address that issue whatsoever. So now let's go back to the question at hand, that we have these massive galaxies out there with all kinds of stars in them, the same number of stars as we have in our galaxy, approximately, obviously, and they determine that by essentially the brightness of the galaxy and how spread out the galaxy is. And so when you look at that and they say, wow, I'm looking at a galaxy that's as old as ours. However, it's supposed to be in young space, so we're perplexed. So if light only takes a couple of, you know, weeks to get here from deep, deep space, then of course that galaxy is going to be as old as our galaxy. That's one suggestion. The other suggestion is that perhaps that galaxy was created old to begin with, which is kind of the creation model, because, you know, we know from Genesis 1 that on the third day God, you know, created the earth, and he said, let the dry land appear out of this ball of water that was in the center of the universe at that time. And dry land appeared, and then the plants appeared, and then on the fourth day, we finally get the stars, you know, the sun and the moon and the stars also. Some creationists have said, okay, well, that's when all of that appeared on Earth. You could actually see the stars by the fourth day, but they were really created, you know, sometime earlier. And again, it's the dilution of time because of Einstein's, you know, theories and all of this other stuff. At the very millisecond of creation, but we don't really know that, you know, for a fact.
Well, that would tell us that everything in the universe is the same age as everything else. Correct.
Exactly. That's the point. From a creation point of view, everything in the universe is the same age, and that age is actually not old, but really very young. So, and what does very young mean? Well, I believe the universe is, you know, less than about 6,000 years old, based on the descriptions that are in the Bible.
And, okay, for the slow learners in the room, and that would be me, I've read that story probably four times and don't really understand the impact until you just said what you just said. That it is actually a reinforcing of the idea that the earth is very young and that the Bible is accurate. And the timeline is, I mean, the discovery that scientists or the James Webb people made is actually reinforcing the notion that the earth is actually only 7,000-8,000 years. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one conclusion that one can draw from that. Well, you don't know the time frame by this study, because all they're doing is taking pictures and doing some measurements based on the luminosity of these objects that they're finding out in their pictures that they've taken. And these are infrared, because infrared goes further than some of the other wavelengths of light. And so they think that they're, you know, seeing these massive galaxies way out in space. They're puzzled because they think they're looking back in time 500 to 700 million years, because that's where these galaxies are being observed. So they're not even at the edge of the supposed known universe yet. And so they're saying, well, you know, 500 million years ago, we should be seeing a much younger galaxy than what we're seeing. We should be seeing a lot of dust clouds, and we should be seeing a lot of new stars being formed, and those new stars just starting to come together in a galaxy. But what we find is a complete galaxy already formed and as huge as our own galaxy, and or as huge as the Andromeda galaxy, for example. We're perplexed by that, because that's not what the models in their model, which is based on the Big Bang, would say, that you know, we're looking way back in time, so therefore we should be seeing the formation of these galaxies instead of a complete finished product, if you will, of galaxies. And so that's why they're saying, well, 99% of their models have been now thrown out of the window, because they're all based on evolution. And they're based on cosmic evolution, And if indeed cosmic evolution is false, which of course I believe it is, then you know they're going to find stuff eventually, which they did here because they've got a more powerful telescope out in space. This is the James Webb Space Telescope, and most of the discoveries in astronomy these days are being you know made with this telescope because the images are much more crisp than we've seen before. Then, you know, they're all upset or they're astonished of what they're finding, but to a creationist who actually believes God's word. And says, you know, on the fourth day, you know, he said, let the stars, you know, let the stars appear and let them be signs in seasons for signs in seasons and, you know, in the sky. And so we already, you know from a creation model that everything had to be created within that first creation week. So it didn't take millions or billions of years or billions of billions of years to create the universe. It was already put together by the time the stars appeared. And, you know, the sun and the moon, we can, and even the sun and the moon and our solar system, you know, they say evolved, you know, over millions and millions of years. And there was this big, big sun ball in the middle that spewed off various things, you know, like the planets. But the problem with that model is that the angular momentum of the spin of the planets aren't all going the same direction. And so if you have a spinning object and something spins off from it, it should be spinning in the same direction. And we know that that indeed is not the case because we know what the angular momentum of our planets are in our solar system. So they had a problem from the very beginning, even stuff that's closer home to us, which are our own planets that are orbiting our own sun. And so things are just getting worse and worse for them as they look deeper and deeper into space.
I wanted to mention that there's a link to the article, to one of the articles on this topic. This happens to be the CNN article that I'm looking at. There's a link to it in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to follow along or check on this this finding a little bit later. Joel Leja, L-E-J-A, is a leading astronomer. He's with Penn State. And this is his comment. The revelation that massive galaxy formation began extremely early in the history of the universe upends what many of us had thought was settled science. There's that term that is so misleading. They even when we talked about COVID, we always talked about settled science. That statement is false. Science is never settled, is it?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, you know, when you learn new things, you adjust your parameters to accommodate your new findings. And in this case, they're going to have to adjust a lot of things because their basic premise is wrong. And hopefully, if they're honest, science folks, they'll, you know, kind of bang their heads and say, oh my gosh, we got to rethink this, all of these models that we've come up with to describe the beginning of time, if you will. And hopefully they'll start reading chapter one of Genesis and try to put things together from a biblical perspective.
Might be a bit much to expect, but the hope is there. The hope is there.
Yes.
Yeah, start there and see what you think. And that would be a logical way to approach this.
But it's always amusing when the data, after you do more and more searching and finding, even this deep space stuff is upholding the Word of God. And we know, of course, as Christians, the Word of God is going to be upheld. And so, but this gives us even more understanding that when God says something, it is truth and it is absolutely true, and it's only our understanding of what the words mean that become clearer and clearer as we go along in this path of, you know, scientific investigation, if you will.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there's an order for a bunch of Bibles at Penn State University. They're going to be shipping them in and opening them up to Genesis and recomputing this whole thing they call settled science. This is kind of revolutionary. It's so simple when you read it in an article, but the ramifications of this are pretty heavy duty things. Something else is, and I know, Don, I'm surprised that you've been able to resist talking about this, but David and I last hour were talking about a report from the Energy Department that has said definitively that the COVID began at the lab in Wuhan. And there are others, including a young lady virologist who happens to be from China, from Hong Kong, and did some of the early research on it, who's saying not only was it from Wuhan, but it was intentional.
Oh, boy. Yes, I mean, this is, fortunately, the truth finally comes out. We knew this from the very beginning, and we knew that Fauci, for example, was hiding this fact. And even today, he would probably say, "Oh, we didn't fund this type of research, and we didn't fund the Wuhan lab." Well, he gave the funds to another another group who did fund the research, and he there's a picture out there on the internet of Fauci with Obama after they built the Wuhan lab. And, both of them are so proud that they moved this research from the United States after it was banned to the Chinese. The Chinese are not our friends, and indeed are our enemies. And so we take this research and we move it to the Wuhan lab. And it's not only the technology that was moved, but it was the specific technology of using bat viruses to create a human virus from the bat virus. The bat virus kills bats.
And that's what they call gain of function research?
Yes. And so they specifically tagged the bat virus with the spike protein, which binds to human cells, and said, well, let's create a virus that will kill people. I mean, this is evil, evil stuff. And the reason why it was banned in the United States was because this is dangerous stuff. And if it got out of the lab, then, you know, we're going to have a big problem on our hands. And indeed, that's exactly what happened in the Wuhan lab. And so was it intentionally released? I mean, the indication is that it, you know, might have been.
Well, her opinion is that they didn't. They released it in Wuhan, but they didn't know how transmissible it was. So they got a much larger infection rate, and a problem just snowballed. But the release itself was intentional. They were kind of like making their own people the clinical study. But it was a much stronger reaction than they expected, and they did not prevent it from going around the world. In fact, intentionally did that. And the reasons were economic and it was power and influence in the world and to weaken our economy. That's the extended thought on this. There's another element in this that has surfaced before, has yet to be confirmed as far as I know, though, but that is that the Chinese military was involved in that research at the Wuhan lab.
Well, you don't do anything in China without the military being involved and without the government being involved. And, of course, the Chinese are very much... I wouldn't say necessarily all the Chinese people, because I want to distinguish that between the leaders of the country who are military, thinkers, if you will, and strategic thinkers from how can we get an upper hand on everybody else in the world. And so this, the Wuhan lab, was indeed a biological warfare lab. Although, you know, they don't want to say that because that would mean that they were actually developing this virus as a biological weapon. And, you know, if you think this is the only biological weapon that the Wuhan lab has created, you're probably a little naive, because there is has already been indications that, oh, you know, this was just the first pandemic. We're going to have many more pandemics come following after this. And even Biden's, you know, agreement with the World Health Organization, who, by the way, is controlled by the Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have the World Health Organization making proclamations about how we should medically treat pandemics, and they're going to want to control everybody's medical community and everybody's, I mean, you know, the various states, countries around the world. Need to bow down to whatever the World Health Organization says, here's the standard of care. Well, if you follow the standard of care of the World Health Organization, you're going to die. So, and of course, you know, if they get control of all of this, if we thought that, you know, clinicians who were saying, hey, there are other ways of treating this besides the vaccine, and these vaccines, we don't know anything about them, and it looks like, you know, the efficacy is not lasting very long, and it's harming people. How about using some of these other, you know, things that would actually treat the condition as opposed to putting people in danger? They were hushed and actually barred from any type of social media. And some of them even barred from their own hospitals from practicing good medicine. And so can you imagine what it's going to be like if indeed the United States gives over our medical authority over to the World Health Organization run by the Chinese? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is insanity at its best.
Well, it's also ingenious, because instead of sending an aircraft, a flight of military aircraft over the country and dropping bombs containing the contaminants, they simply load civilian aircraft with people who have the disease and they spread it. Much less dramatic and maybe much more cost effective, and doesn't invite the retribution, the military response that a flight of warcraft would do. This is, well, it's ingenious, and we should be alert to it.
It's ingenious, and it's insidious. Mm. It is
evil.
You know,
it's just evil.
It's evil, yeah. Of course, you know, if you infect your enemy with a disease, then your enemy is going to be weak, and at a certain point would be weak enough for you to do the military invasion and not have very much resistance, you know, because everybody's sick.
The historical parallel is interesting, because in the old days of siege warfare, they would use catapults to launch infected corpses into the walled city to spread disease. I mean, it like this is nothing new. It's just done on a massive scale now.
Interesting. It's done on a global scale, which is you know, which is crazy. And the thing about the Chinese, they don't mind killing their own people.
Well, that's been proven through history. Yeah. Interesting. We've covered a lot of ground today. Dr. Don, again, a moment, a member of the board at Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com. And there you'll find a lot of information about the biblical story of creation, and it's information of a scientific nature, so that you can be equipped to discuss with the friends and acquaintances and coworkers around the water cooler, and kind of, you might just bring that up in conversation. Some say, hey, do you know how the world started? You could start a conversation on that.
Yeah, God spoke it into existence.
That's the way it works. Don, thanks very much. We'll appreciate we appreciate your time as always. We'll see you in a week or so. Okay?
All right. Very good. See you, folks.
Bye-bye.
See you, Doc.